Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. For decades, law enforcement has waged what has commonly become known as a war on drugs. Many U.S. presidents have used that very phrase to describe it, and in all the years since, as millions of people have been arrested for drug offenses, that effort has contributed to crowded prisons and at times lumped individuals with simple possession charges into prisons with hardened criminals. Whether or not you believe that so-called war on drugs should be ended, the sheer number of people in our criminal justice system facing drug-related charges suggests how we treat those offenders and what we can do to minimize the likelihood they will return to our courts on other drug charges may require something beyond incarceration. And that's where drug courts come in. They are specialty courts, which, yes, sometimes are unable to assist someone, but ultimately seek to use a variety of tactics, supervision, drug testing, treatment programs, sanctions, incentives, all in the interest of addressing not just the law breaking, but a defendant's addiction in hopes of rehabilitating and not merely punishing. Today on the program, we'll learn more about drug courts as we talk with two guests. Judge Jeffrey Ford founded the Champaign County Drug Court back in 1999. Its mission is to develop substance-free, productive citizens and break the cycle of criminal recidivism. Judge Ford, welcome to Focus.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us. Also with us is Carolyn Cooper, a research professor and associate director of the Justice Programs Office at the School of Public Affairs at American University in Washington, where she directs the Justice Department's Drug Court Clearinghouse Project. Carolyn Cooper, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be participating.
Glad to have you with us. And as we learn about drug courts and how they work and the challenges that they face, we welcome you to the conversation as well with questions or comments. You can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu, and we welcome your questions on WILL's Facebook page, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. Judge Ford, let me start with you. What precisely is a drug court, and what is its purpose?
Drug courts, and there's a number of different types of drug courts. Our purpose here in Champaign County is we take long-term people who have been in this criminal justice system and who have had addictions for a long time, and it's an alternative to a lot of these people, the penitentiary, because a number of them have been to the penitentiary before. And our purpose is to try and keep them in the community, not only get them clean, basically sober, but also to try and go after the underlying problems that cause the addictions in the first place. So when they finish, successfully complete, it's not just that they've had a year clean or so, it's that they are now able to handle life on the terms that it comes at them. So if they don't have an education, we try and get them the education, a GED if necessary. Hopefully help them with employment. If there's emotional or mental health issues, we try and work on that. So it's not just cleaning somebody up and saying, okay, goodbye. It's working to make them a citizen, somebody who is outside of the criminal thinking that they were in before and is able to contribute. There are other drug courts. Ours is what's called a post-adjudicatory because all of our people have pled guilty, and this is part of their sentence. There's others in the state of Illinois and around the country that are more pre-adjudicatory, which means they either are charged and the case is held over their heads, or they're not charged and it's held to be determined whether they're going to charge them, and they are given the opportunity to participate in the same type of situation that we put our people through, except theirs is that they can walk away either without a conviction or with a lesser conviction or penalty by successfully completing the program. In a nutshell, that's it.
Carolyn, of the various forms of drug courts that the judge just described, what's most common across the country?
Well, the drug court started as being pre-adjudication. The Miami program was really didn't even require a plea. The idea was to really shift people in the criminal justice system to the public health system. But what happened is while they could do that in Miami, it was difficult to implement that kind of model in other places. And then when funding dried up, a lot of the funds that's been available for drug courts come from corrections, and people need to be under a sentence. So I would say that most of the programs now are the model that Judge Ford has described, post-adjudication. But there are some that are still pre-adjudication, or that there have been statutes recently passed in several states that permit dismissal of the charges or expungement, various ways of doing that, so that the person can be relieved of a felony conviction, because that can become such a barrier to employment. But so to answer your question, most of them are turning to post-adjudication, but there's still the idea of trying to keep the benefits of the pre-adjudication model to the extent possible by dismissal, expungement, or whatever statutory provisions are available.
There are some that are both. We have a number of counties in Illinois that have a pre-adjudicatory and a post-adjudicatory. The theory is, though, is to get people in right away, and the most serious people who are back on their way to the penitentiary, is why there's a lot of post-adjudicatory, because those are people we need to react with right away, or they're going to stay and continue in our system. So that's why there's counties that also do both.
Yes, and I wanted to stress that the focus really is on the high-risk, high-need person, and it's very difficult to, you know, to from a public policy perspective to, you know, have them as pretrial, because they usually have long histories of criminal justice contact, and so, you know, prosecutors are not really inclined to not have some kind of a conviction there.
Judge Ford, why is it important in your mind to focus on those folks that are sort of high risk or have been through the system before multiple times versus somebody who maybe, you know, it's their first offense? Why shouldn't they get the advantage of this sort of system instead?
There are a number of people who will get arrested once and that'll be it. They will get scared. They will never get back in the system. They're going to say, I don't want to live this way. Some of those people, I mean, no matter what we do, they're just never going to come back in the system. The people who continuously recidivate, who just keep coming back, either are going to be a drain on our society for a long time unless we can change them right now. So they're the ones who have self-identified as the high-risk people. There are people now doing research, and there's protocols now available to try and pick out those first offenders who will likely recidivate more. There's a lot of work going on right now in the DUI area. So we can look at this person's background, look at their mental health, look at how they did in school, age, sex, socioeconomic, and make a prediction whether they will be back and whether they're high risk or not. But if you get the masses coming in and they're all first offenders, if you just look at them, you don't know who that high risk is. If they've been back 3, 4, 5, 6 times, you know who they are now. So when we started in Champaign County, most drug courts wait for hundreds of thousands of dollars in grants. So we started with nothing. We just said, we have a problem, we're going to do it. So we took the population that was there and said, these are the people we need to focus on. And because we'd had limited resources, that was the best use of our resources.
Carolyn, you mentioned Miami. Was that the location of the first drug court?
Yes.
When was that?
It opened August 1989.
Okay, and what was it tasked with doing, and how was it funded?
Well, it was really just kind of the brainchild of the chief judge and his deputy chief judge, who were just overwhelmed by the both the volume of drug cases and the revolving door. And it was a time when there was a big push, no plea bargaining, hard on crime, war on drugs. And so no matter how fast they process the cases, because, as Judge Ford had said, an addicted person is not going to just respond to jail, so they kept coming back, and they were just overwhelmed. So the chief judge sent his deputy, Judge Herbert Klein, around the country to say, what can we do about this problem? And at the time, the prevailing approach was to have treatment services was inpatient treatment. They really weren't using intensive outpatient. But they patched together different programs, and particularly one that they found in the Bronx, New York, where they used intensive outpatient services, drug testing, acupuncture, and tried to get a kind of a stopgap approach to halting this tremendous revolving door. And so that was really their initial goal. And the judges had been working with these addicts long enough, as Judge Ford has said, to recognize that addiction was a disease that needed to have treatment, and unless they could provide the treatment, they were just going to keep coming back. So their real goal was to get the public health system actively involved in treating these people in an outpatient basis. And that was the model that was set up, and it was very different from anything that had been done before in any kind of systematic way.
And you said then, but ultimately funding dried up for these courts?
They didn't have funding. They just used existing resources.
Right.
They just, you know, got the treatment people, whoever had treatment resources together, to come to the table and ask them what could they do. They had used acupuncture, which was not a treatment, but it's kind of a pre-treatment protocol that at least could get people to come to court every day for their acupuncture treatment. They'd have some accountability, and it would prepare them for treatment. But they, in fact, Miami really never got any federal grants until they were operating for a number of years, and they've never gotten significant federal grants. They've done it by their local resources.
All right, so let me ask Judge Ford, when she mentions local resources, what sort of partnerships need to be in place to effectively execute something when you have no funding for it?
When I got into this, which was a year and a half after Miami, and I knew nothing about Miami, but in February of 91, I took over all the traffic in Champaign County, and I determined that with DUIs, we weren't getting anywhere. The harshest penalty for a DUI was up to a year in jail. If they got their good time, it would be 6 months. They would be out. They'd have the same problems they walked into. So I decided that I was going to try and change behaviors. So everybody, before they were sentenced in front of me for DUI, had to have a substance abuse evaluation, which would tell me what the problems were. It was on the books in Illinois, but it wasn't mandatory. I made it mandatory in Champaign County. So there was nothing we had to change there. The treatment people were already in place. What I did was start monitoring them. I had people coming back in front of me to show me that they were getting their treatment. I started ordering them to go to sobriety-based self-help group meetings, normally known as AA at the time. Mm-hmm. We also set up a few other things. So probation monitored the people that weren't coming back to me, which they were already in place to do, and I monitored the other ones. So it really didn't cost us any extra money back in 1991. And in fact, back then, when somebody was really motivated to get treatment, the treatment people would help them fund it. I was getting calls from treatment places outside of Champaign County saying, what are you doing there? Because your people are the most motivated people we have. So in 98, when my presiding judge said, we're going to start a drug court, and I was to put it together without any funding, I went back to the same model I was doing with the DUIs, but I brought in all the treatment people and we sat down and discussed how this would work, because instead of having reports coming to me that they wrote, I was going to be seeing them in person weekly, and we were going to have these people come back weekly.
This seems, though, like it would be really time-consuming to the point where I don't see how that meshes with concerns about a backlog of too many cases all the time within our court system.
It is time-consuming. When I was doing the DUIs, I was told by other judges I was spending too much time with these people. But I decided, when people start standing up in your courtroom and saying that you've saved their lives, even though the attorneys were going after me and saying I was the worst judge in Champaign County and I didn't know what I was doing, their clients were hugging me. So I decided I would take the time that was necessary. So I was on the bench 8 hours a day, which normally judges don't do. You have to do some reading, you have to sign stuff, but I was spending for almost over 6 years, 8 hours a day on the bench just doing traffic court because this was so important. When we started our drug court, just set aside time that normally I wasn't in court for meetings, started the court early so it wouldn't take other people out of their normal court hours, but we just decided this was something we had to do, so we got a team together and we just put it together and said, for me, if I'm doing the right thing, and I felt I was, I'm going to take the time. It didn't matter to me how much time it was going to take.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're discussing drug courts with Judge Jeffrey Ford from the Champaign County Drug Court and Carolyn Cooper, Research Professor and Associate Director of the Justice Programs Office at American University in Washington, where she directs the Justice Department's Drug Court Clearinghouse Project. To join our conversation, you can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or you can email your question or comment to will-talk@illinois.edu. All right, so I have a what sounds like a relatively simple question, but I suspect has a very complicated answer, which is, when it comes to a drug court like this, does it work?
Yes. One of the drug court logos is drug courts work. But I brought with me so you could understand just how much we do in Champaign County. A few of the statistics from our last graduation. We have graduations every 6 months, and we'll have one coming up December 10th. Our last graduation class was 8 people. The oldest was 54, the youngest was 27, average age 38. They spent 142 months total in our drug court, which is 11.8 years, average time almost 18 months each. They all started using alcohol or cannabis in their teens, earliest being 13 years of age. Many also use cocaine, heroin, and other drugs. By the time from their first use until the time they walked into drug court, their average use was 14 years of substances. They came in with 54 petty traffic tickets. Those are fine only. They had 25 misdemeanor convictions, 34 felonies. Those sentences included 43 probation-type sentences. Mm-hmm. They had 4 only sentences to the county jail, 30 days, 90 days, whatever. And between the 8 of them, they had 22 prior sentences to the penitentiary. Those 8 people, when they finished with my drug court and they graduated for the total of 11.8 years, they had not committed any offenses, not even a speeding ticket between the 8 of them. So you look at these people with all their felony and misdemeanors coming in with 22 sentences to the penitentiary between them. You add their time together, almost 12 years. And for the time, that 12 years that they were in drug court, nothing. They weren't committing any crimes. To graduate from our drug court, you have to have at least 1 year of sobriety. And as I tell them, that means in a row. Uh-huh. So these people who were prolifically committing crimes, and of course for every conviction there's usually one or two cases that are dismissed, were not causing the police any problems. They weren't using. A lot of them now had jobs. They were back in school. If not, they were working.
So you've had some success stories for sure. What is the recidivism rate of somebody that goes through drug court, and how does that compare to somebody who doesn't?
The recidivism rate, I can't tell you for sure because off the top of my head what the statistics are, but there's a lot of recidivism going by. And, of course, the longer somebody is in the system, the more times they've been in the penitentiary, if they find that they can be on probation and get away with things, nothing is going to change because this is how they live. They're comfortable in this lifestyle. But we have one of the toughest drug courts because of our population, and we're graduating between 35% and 40% now. We have made some changes because we did get some federal funding. We had an enhancement grant, and we have made some changes. We have mental health really now on board with us. I have somebody coordinating. We even have a police officer helping us monitor. And so our graduation rates are getting better. We now have statistics we've been putting together because we've been going on for 13 years now. Our 5-year recidivism rate for our graduates is about a third. We have 66% who after 5 years have not committed another crime after they graduated. And again, these people were prolific beforehand.
Okay. Carolyn, how does that compare to anyone going through traditional courts? What are the usual recidivism rates?
Traditional recidivism rates are that, within 3 years, at least, two-thirds, and that's really an understatement, will be back in before the criminal justice system. And most of them are back. It's a question of being apprehended, too. And as Judge Ford said, it's not only the drug possession charges, but it's all the other offenses they are committing against public safety that, they may not be arrested for. But I think, 67, 70% of people going through the traditional process will be back in the system, within 3 years and usually much shorter. So, I mean, the statistics that Judge Ford is reporting are remarkable, and I think they also speak to the fact that it's not only, as he said, is dealing with the drug addiction, but it's all the underlying problems that we have come to realize, are associated with drugs, with the low self-esteem, literacy, medical conditions, vocational needs, housing needs, all of that the programs are dealing with.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. My guests are Judge Jeffrey Ford from the Champaign County Drug Court and Carolyn Cooper, research professor and associate director of the Justice Program's office at American University, where she directs the Justice Department's Drug Court Clearinghouse Project. And we're discussing how drug courts work, and we welcome your questions or comments at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We also welcome questions and comments on WILL's Facebook and Twitter pages. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. The phone numbers again, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. And we'll go first this morning to Jeff in Piatone. Jeff, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. First off, happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Right back at you.
Hey, this brings up a pretty good topic that you got going here. There's a big push to legalize drugs, and I'm dead set against it. Now, I've never taken drugs in my life, although, I do drink alcohol, but I don't do it in excess. Now, when I was in college, sure, we all did that. It was crazy, stupid, whatever. But here's the problem. I have family relatives, including my brother, who got messed up on that stuff, and it took him 20 years to finally straighten himself out. He did get thrown in jail once. Thank God people were looking out after him, but I know other people, a different story. The problem I have with the whole drug situation is now the big push, it seems like a lot of the country wants to go legalizing this stuff. Well, who's going to pay for all this, like you're talking about, the rehabs, the whole situation that you're doing? I commend you for everything that you've done, sir. I think it shows that the program, at least one program, works. But I really do think the system's broken. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but there's just too many ways, too many loopholes. I think some of these criminal attorneys can get away with just about murder when it comes to trying to get somebody off the hook. And it's not about the right thing. It's about winning at all costs. And I just was wondering what your comments were.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. And we'll talk about let me start with Judge Ford. He raises a few different issues there, but what are some general observations you have about the system and where your drug court fits within it and whether it's the system itself that needs to be, reimagined?
For my drug court, we are performing, I think, the way we need to. Could we take a few more people in? Yes. Not everybody, one, wants drug court because some people are very comfortable in their addiction and they're not going to change. Other people, I need the jail. I need the threat of the penitentiary because these people have been steeped in their addictions and the criminal acts for so long that if I don't have that threat there, we can't make them change. So not everybody can make it through a drug court. Not everybody does. And some people, the acts that they commit are so heinous that we aren't spending our time with them. I'm not going to get into the legalization of drug issue. I just follow the law. But if anybody wants to believe that legalizing drugs is going to solve all the problems, I would suggest they go into our juvenile abuse and neglect courts and find out what people who are addicted have done to their children. Children that are born addicted, what our society has to pay to put these people, these children, through the educational system and hopefully get them into a situation where they're able to be productive, what they have done to their own lives. Look at brain scans of people who use meth and find out that there's nothing going on up there. There's no activity. Legalizing it tells people it's okay to use these things. And it's been shown that it does destroy people and it will destroy whole families. And whether they're committing a crime or not doesn't matter because we're going to have another portion of society paying for it unless they can figure out how not to do that. But you look at these young children who are innocents who are now caught up in all this. A meth house is a toxic waste site, and we have two-year-olds running around in there. And even after they clean up the site and take it out, there's still the toxins in the rugs and in the paint and in the woodwork, and it's just you shouldn't have people living there.
You make the distinction, though, between meth and marijuana, for example.
But there's, you know, where will we stop? We're going to legalize some drugs and not others. Okay, we can do that, but...
Well, I guess some would argue we do that already. There are some things that are prescription drugs that are as powerful or more powerful or potentially more destructive than illegal drugs.
And they are regulated, but take a look at the numbers now, and the prescription drugs are really out there being used a lot and abused by people. It's a thorny situation, so I don't get involved in that. I just handle the cases as they come to me and try and do the best I can with the people that come in.
All right. Carolyn?
Well, I second everything that Judge Ford has been saying, but I can say that we've been working with drug courts in other countries where there's probably 20 other countries that are adopting this drug court model. And in many of them, possession for personal use is not a crime, and yet the criminal activity that is resulting from drug addiction is still a great concern, public safety-wise, family-wise. The impact on society. So, whether or not the actual possession of marijuana, for example, is a crime or is not a crime, we're seeing that the implications for public safety and society in many communities in the United States as well as abroad are just devastating.
Carolyn, what about the caller's question about the win at all costs attitude that many lawyers will have, that it's sort of endemic to our system. Does that potentially keep some people out of drug courts that might benefit from them?
Well, my background is as a public defender, so I feel really strongly about the fact that the programs need to be designed so that, you know, that defendants' rights are protected. But this is a great focus of most of the drug courts, and so as an attorney, one realizes that as long as the defendant's rights are protected, unless that person is going to get treatment and get to their underlying issues, they're going to be back in the system again and again, and each time they come back, they're going to have enhanced penalties because they have one more conviction, so as well as do all kinds of damage to themselves and their families. So I think that, you know, lawyers, if they are informed about the drug court, will do support the program. The problem is, you know, some of them don't really know about the program and, you know, need to understand better about addiction as well. So I think that's really it's an educational effort that's needed.
I want to walk through the process, what a defendant experiences when they enter your drug court in just a couple of minutes, Judge. But I want to remind our listeners that we are talking about drug courts with Judge Jeffrey Ford from the Champaign County Drug Court and Professor Carolyn Cooper from American University in Washington, where she directs the Justice Department's Drug Court Clearinghouse Project. You can join our conversation at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL. 800-222-WILL, or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we will take more of your phone calls after a short break. This is Focus.
Lyle Talbot starred with Humphrey Bogart before Bogart was a star. Talbot worked with Mae West and Shirley Temple, was Lex Luthor in Superman serials, co-starred in Ed Wood's film about a transvestite, Glenn or Glenda, and played Ozzy's friend Joe in Ozzy and Harriet. On the next Fresh Air, his daughter Margaret Talbot talks about her new memoir about him. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on AM 580.
Support comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana. This Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar, it's a North Shore tasting, holiday-inspired cocktails with Sonia Castlebaum, followed from 7 to 9 by the jazz guitar sounds of Ken Smith and Friends. Details on the Corkscrew's Facebook page.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're discussing drug courts with Judge Jeffrey Ford from the Champaign County Drug Court and Carolyn Cooper, research professor and associate director of the Justice Programs Office at American University in Washington, where she directs the Justice Department's Drug Court Clearinghouse Project. And we welcome your questions and comments for our guests at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. Or you can email your question to will-talk@illinois.edu. Judge Ford, let's walk through the process for somebody that may find their way ultimately into your drug court. How does that process begin?
It begins by somebody saying they want to be in drug court. It's a voluntary program. We don't sentence somebody who doesn't want drug court to drug court because they're not going to cooperate. Of course, even the people, my people, who say they're going to cooperate, a lot of them don't want to cooperate because they're addicts. Now, they when they are sober, they voice the right things. I want to change my life. But they're very comfortable in their addiction, so they really don't want to. But what happens initially is that they have to say they want to be in drug court, and they have to sign consents.
And who do they say that to? Where does that happen?
For me, because of the way we're set up, they will tell the judge who they're in front of for sentencing that I want to be in drug court.
So they're in the traditional court system.
Yes.
They go before a judge just as they would in any other circumstance, and they say, I really want to be a part of this drug court. But it's not an alternative to sentencing, right?
It is the sentence.
It is the sentence.
Because for us, as opposed to a diversionary type pre-adjudicatory program, they are sentenced to drug court probation. So if they say they want treatment, they want to be in drug court, then the probation office does a pre-sentence investigation of them, and they also have an assessment done by a state agency called TASC, who all they do is work with addiction issues. And they assess them to see if there really is an addiction, what that addiction is, and they make a recommendation as to what type of treatment and counseling. Sometimes it's intensive treatment, sometimes it's residential, but it just depends. At that point, then the judge will get all these reports and it'll go for sentencing, and the judge will make the determination as to whether they are eligible for our drug court and if they should be in drug court.
Okay.
Then our drug court's every Monday. So they will be sentenced to see me the next Monday at 1 o'clock. 10:30, though, Monday mornings, I have a team that meets. It involves a probation officer, state's attorney, public defender, people from TASC, treatment people, from Prairie Center, does our substance abuse treatment. There's two counselors and a case management, two people from Community Elements, which is the mental health center in Champaign County because we have mental health issues there. Family services is involved because some of these people will need family counseling, which sometimes you just don't treat one person. We have Safe House is involved, a number of our people.
It's a lot of people around the table.
That's
to,
right.
To deal with this.
And we have a sheriff's deputy.
Okay.
And we sit down and we look at this person as a whole, not just what the crime was, but as a whole, and say, what's their addiction? What are the problems in their life? Where do we need to go? And so we discuss these things every Monday as to each and every person that's coming to court. So usually this meeting will take an hour and a half to 2 hours. My drug court will take an hour.
How many people are going through your program at any one time?
We have averaged normally around 60. We have a few less right now, but that happens. It comes and it goes.
So do you go over all 60 every
yes.
single time?
Well, some people, when they're doing very well, don't have to come every week. So right. we have them come every other week. But between 40 and 50 every week, we in-depth talk about. Now, some people will take a minute or two. Right. They're doing fine. Their drops are negative. They're working. There's no problems in their life right now. Other people, there's all sorts of issues we have to talk about. We talk about whether the person should be rewarded, and we have handed out rewards, gift cards, to them when they're doing very well. Getting a GED will give them a reward, 6 months clean, 1 year clean, things like that. We will reward them. People don't like to reward people for doing the things that they should do,
right.
but the research has shown this is powerful. And of course, if they're doing well, even aside from these things, I will praise them. I will talk to them about their life, which is not the same as a traditional court.
Now, again, where does the money come from to pay for gift cards for
Well, we have a situation now for our drug court that we do get donations, and we have there's a fee, $5 fee for criminal cases that goes to our drug court fund, which was passed by the county board 5, 6, 7 years ago. Okay. So we do have some money for that. And it's powerful for them. It's powerful for them for me to give them an attaboy because, as you can tell from the history of some of these people, usually judges don't have good things to say to them or about them. So I will ask them about their health. I will ask them about family health, if they just had a baby, things like that. How's the new job going? And we'll talk about those things. So it's me being interested in their lives and them as people. And that is a powerful reward for them. Of course, if they have messed up, we'll talk about a sanction. We'll talk about them writing an essay or spending even a day in jail. Doesn't have to be a long time. I don't believe in putting them in jail for a long, long time because they can get institutionalized. So a short-term period in jail, come out, and okay, let's start all over again. We will order public service work, pick up garbage in the parks or do something 5 hours in the next week or 7 hours in the next week, or added treatment. But we will talk about rewards. We will talk about sanctions. We will make a determination as to what to do with every person. And then at 1 o'clock, they'll come in and we'll go through the court.
And then they do this every week for a year, or if it's the ones that are every other week for a year?
Well, we normally our average stay is about a year and a half.
Okay.
They have to have a year clean, and sometimes they don't get cleaned up right away. Or halfway through, they'll mess up.
Is there a point at which you say, okay, that's it, we've tried, and it's not working?
For me, and I learned this a long, long time ago when I was doing the DUIs, everybody does treatment at their own rate, and we're going to expect some failures. I've had people from AA tell me that if they relapse, they call it doing research. Okay, but I will expect an addict to use. But the longer they're in treatment, the more tools they should have where they're not going to relapse again, that they are going to start figuring out that not am I just doing it for you, Judge, but I'm doing it for myself. So the relapse, it should become less and less. Yes, there is a point where if they continuously use and they're positive for 3, 4 weeks in a row, we might relook at their treatment regimen and say, you need a more structured regimen of treatment, or you need to be in residential treatment because you can't stop using. So we don't throw them out of the program just for that. Unless we're 9 months in and they're still using every week, we have a big problem here. But we give them the time they need to recover as long as they're making progress. Some of them will wait us out. It's like a con doing time. They're going to wait us out because this is how they've played the game before.
How much do you do? You do drug testing over the course
of
this
time? We do drug testing.
How often?
We can do it weekly or more. We do regularly scheduled ones, and we do random ones, so they don't know. And sometimes on the regularly scheduled one, we won't take it because we know they're going to be clean, and we'll just have a random one.
Right.
But it's just to try and stay a step ahead of them. And we had to do that when the synthetic drugs came out, try and figure out how we could catch them because they're very manipulative because they're used to doing these things.
Carolyn, again, how does this compare to other drug courts across the country?
Well, I think what Judge Ford is describing is very much where we'd like to see, you know, all drug courts are. I mean, Judge Ford is one of the leading drug court judges and I think has given a lot of thought and integration of all of the behavioral modification research, addiction research, as well as criminal justice practice. But what he's describing is exactly the model of that we want to see drug courts work, and most of them do use these strategies.
I have to ask, what happens, Judge, when you retire from the bench? I mean, you are clearly very much involved in this and into it and aggressive towards this kind of project. But another judge comes along, may not be as engaged. Is this court just going to go away?
All of these types of courts started, they're personality driven. If you don't have a judge that wants to do this and feels that they can do it, it's not going to go anywhere. And, of course, then you bring in other people. When I first started this, basically I said, I want this to go from personality-driven to an institution because I know I'm not going to be here forever. So we have to put our criminal justice system in Champaign County saying, this is what we do. This is how we do it. Now, everybody, a new judge comes in, he doesn't have to do it exactly the way I did, but I want to have the model set up so it no longer has to be Judge Ford, but it is the way that it is done. So it goes from personality-driven to the institution. That said, you're always going to need the right type of judge to do this. There's some people that can do some things better than others, and there are judges who will be able to handle this type of court better than others.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and there's still time for your questions and comments about drug courts for Judge Jeffrey Ford and Professor Carolyn Cooper at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone numbers again, 333-WILL or toll-free 800-222-WILL. Carolyn, is there any active interest in expanding the number of drug courts in the country right now?
Well, I think there's always that interest. There's drug courts operating now in every state, and the real focus now is on enlarging the population, increasing the numbers, expanding the criteria. And we're seeing a lot of permutations, for example, a focus on veterans, recognition that many veterans, particularly those that have been deployed multiple times in Afghanistan and Iraq, are coming into the criminal justice system with substance abuse problems that are associated with trauma, PTSD, and associated conditions. So that's been a big move to have either tracks within existing drug courts or veteran-specific courts. So I think that that's one of the beauties of the drug court concept. It really makes all that are involved in the criminal justice system look beneath the case file and the statistic to the underlying problems. There's a big push to address mental health needs because it was, you know, most people realize that, I guess, 80% of people that have drug addiction problems also have associated mental health problems, depression, and other illnesses that they're either self-medicating for or the result of their drug use. And as Judge Ford said, he has a special enhancement now for the program to try to address people with their co-occurring disorders. But I think that's been the thrust, to have to increase drug courts so that they're accessible to everyone, but also to increase the services and increase the outreach to either special needs or special categories of offenders.
Let's take another call. We have David on the line from Champaign. David, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My main question is with the progressive laws with marijuana and how states like Washington and Colorado are going to be treating this in the future, and how it becomes a little more murky for states that still follow the federal guidelines compared to the states that are trying to legalize it.
Okay, so what happens, Carolyn, with drug courts in Washington, for example, Washington State or the state of Colorado, where they have legalized recreational marijuana use?
Well, I want to clarify that the statutes are very limited. I think it's like under 1 ounce of marijuana, and it's so I don't think those are the people that are really, you know, coming into the drug court, as Judge Ford described. I mean, these are people that are, you know, are dealing with heavy drug usage that, you know, is not going to be addressed by these kind of statutes. But from my limited contacts with programs since the enactment of those legislation, I think that a lot of their approach will be, if you want to be in drug court because, you know, you're using much more extensively than it's covered by that statute, it's a no drug policy. It's a drug free requirement. Just like most drug courts will not permit people to use alcohol because the nexus between alcohol and drug use for an addict is much more serious than just the normal person who doesn't have an addiction. So I really, from my limited perspective, I don't think it's going to affect drug courts.
Let's go next to Tim. He's in the Chicago area. Hi, Tim. Welcome to the show.
Hi. And, I wanted to say I do commend your guests as far as the concept of having a drug court that treats people. But I honestly think we've had this war on drugs for 40-plus years now, and we've been criminalizing a large percentage of population. We have more people in prison than any other democratic country in the world, percentage-wise, and most of them are drug-related. Now, it's not really going away, and I agree with the treatment aspect, but couldn't we take the criminality out of it? You know, for possession or things that are non-criminal in nature, outside of the law against it, possession, but I mean, if someone's not breaking out, doing something that's actively against the law outside of possession, do we really need to put that person in jail? And I mean, can we afford to? We, you know, as a country, can we even afford to? Not to mention the lives you're taking people out of the way from their families, et cetera, et cetera. I just think the cost of this quote-unquote war on drugs is way bigger than anything, any of the good it's ever really done. And treatment, if people have addictive personalities, they need treatment. They don't need prison or jail. That's my point.
All right. Thanks very much for the comments. I'd actually like to hear both of our guests respond to that. Judge Ford?
Again, I'm not going to get into the war on drugs, but the problem is that if somebody needs treatment, that there's a difference between needing treatment and actually getting that treatment and following through with it. And my drug court, I make them follow through with it. A lot of them don't want to because, again, they like what they do. They like the drugs. They like their lifestyle. They don't know any different. And to have them change their lives, they have to face, and sometimes some very ugly things in their past to get over that addiction, and they don't want to voluntarily do that. Well, if there's no criminal element, which of course is not in the drug court model, how are you going to make them do something that they need to as opposed to just stay an addict? Because getting clean is not easy. And ask anybody who has quit smoking cigarettes 10 or 20 times. It's not easy to change, but we're dealing with the same thing. We're dealing with an addiction that is very powerful. And so I don't know the answer to the question, so I'm just going to do my job and follow the law.
All right, Carolyn?
And I just, you know, wanted to reiterate that, you know, many of the programs are not dealing with simple possession of marijuana. I mean, the focus is on the high-risk, high-need person who's come back into the system many, many times with offenses that endanger public safety because of their drug use. So this is really where the focus of the drug court is, and as Judge Ford said, it's using the leverage of the criminal justice system to promote treatment. He mentioned that he started with the DUI cases, and those, you know, are clearly public safety, you know, very serious public safety problems. So I think really that's where the focus of the drug courts are, and whether, you know, as I mentioned, whether there's whatever happens with the legalization issues that were in Colorado or Washington, that's not really focusing on the high risk, high need persons that the drug courts are seeking to help.
And of course, not everybody in my drug court is a possession case. I have forgeries, I have thefts, I have burglaries. There's a number of DUIs, but other types of cases like this. Now, yes, I do have a number of possessions, but if you look, possession isn't the only crime that they've been involved with. This is just the latest in the series of what they've been caught with, but it shows that this is the problem that creates all the other problems, is that they continuously commit crimes. They just got caught with a bunch of drugs before they could commit another crime.
Well, is there something else, though, that you would like to see done within our criminal justice system to reduce recidivism rates?
The drug courts could do more, but it's not popular to put the money up front to treat the way we need to treat these people. Drug courts are a lot less expensive than the traditional model. You take just the 8 people that graduated from my drug court, if they went to the penitentiary, and they've been there before. So you figure penitentiary now, what, $23,000, $24,000 a year just to house them? They may get treatment, they may not get treatment, as opposed to maybe $4,000 to $5,000 a year in drug court. That's a $20,000 difference for the 8 of them. That's $160,000 for 1 year. A lot of these people, because of their history, would be going for more than 1 year, and normally they spend a year and a half in my drug court. So we're up to over $200,000 in savings. But if they can stay in my drug court, they will stay in the community, they will get a job, as opposed to having to come back, being on parole, and having to learn to live here. They will have changed their friends, because people, places, and things are very powerful in change. People coming out of the penitentiary will not have changed their friends, because those are the only ones they know. People in my drug court, if DCFS was involved with them and their children, they might be wrapping up those cases, whereas if they get out of the penitentiary, those children might still be somewhere else. there's all sorts of social costs that are added on. So we are saving a lot of money. But for us to be able to continue this type of work, we need to be able to have the treatment facilities available. We need to be able to have mental health facilities available. We need to be able to have educational available and family services where they can get counseling that they need. But these are upfront costs for right now, as opposed to what they've already built in the overhead for the other way the system works. So what I would like to see is a focus just on providing the resources that these problem-solving courts, drug courts, mental health courts, veterans courts, DUI courts need to be able to continue the work.
We will have to leave it there. We're just out of time, but I want to say thanks to our guest this morning. Judge Jeffrey Ford founded the Champaign County Drug Court. Its mission is to develop substance-free, productive citizens and break the cycle of criminal recidivism. Judge Ford, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Carolyn Cooper is Research Professor and Associate Director of the Justice Programs Office at the School of Public Affairs at American University in Washington. Carolyn, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you for inviting me.
We welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website, will.illinois.edu/focus. Focus will be preempted tomorrow and Friday for a pair of Thanksgiving specials. On Thanksgiving Day, we'll present Beyond the Tie-Dye, Counterculture in Champaign-Urbana, a documentary produced by students at University High School. Then on Friday, Sean Powers will host a special program presenting excerpts from the 6th Annual Hunger Symposium Exploring Childhood Hunger, which took place September 18th, hosted by the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Among others, we'll hear from Larry Joseph, director of Voices for Illinois Children, who talks about childhood poverty. Today's program was produced by Travis Stanzel. Other members of our Focus team are Pam Dempsey, Kimberly Cronick, and Jim Meadows. Kyle Mabry's our technical director. He handled your calls. Have a happy, safe, healthy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk with you next week. I'm Craig Cohen.